Drive is over. If you missed supporting our campaign in real time, you're not too late. Donate now at cjsffunddrive.ca or text DONATE to 778-782-2573 and become radio's best friend.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We're doing very well. I think we're leading by a lot. And if we can keep them, if we can keep that cheating down, because they're a bunch of cheats, if we can keep that cheating down, we're going to have a tremendous victory. I think it'll go down as one of the greatest victories of all time.
Election day has arrived, but the fight for the presidency may soon be entering a new phase as Donald Trump's laying the groundwork to challenge the results again if he loses to Kamala Harris. We'll speak with Mother Jones reporter Ari Berman, author of Minority Rule, The Right-Wing Attack on the Will of the People and the Fight to Resist It, and New York Times reporter Jim Rutenberg, who's examined how a Republican movement driven by disinformation has taken over election boards across the country, which could result in a vote certification crisis. Then to the misinformation web.
In our month-long research of misinformation in Spanish, we also came upon conspiracies about the FBI raid at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate, lies about Kamala Harris being a Marxist, theories about President Joe Biden's decision to not run for re-election. All of these narratives originated in English, only to be repurposed soon after in Spanish.
We'll speak to Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Nejosa of Latino USA about election misinformation and disinformation being directed at Spanish speakers in the United States. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Today is Election Day. Over 78 million people across the United States have already voted in early voting, with record participation in battleground states like North Carolina and Georgia. Control of Congress is at stake, with 34 Senate seats and the entire House of Representatives up for election. Of those, the Cook Political Report says 22 House races and 4 Senate races as toss-ups. Republicans need to pick up 2 seats to gain a majority in the Senate, while Democrats are just 4 seats short of taking back the House. On Monday, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump both campaigned in the swing state of Pennsylvania. Harris wrapped up her campaign with a final rally in Philadelphia.
I am ready to offer that leadership as the next president of the United States of America. However, the race ain't over yet, and we must finish strong, and this could be one of the closest races in history. Every single vote matters.
Harris was joined by Oprah Winfrey at her closing rally, which also featured performances by Ricky Martin, Lady Gaga, and will.i.am. Donald Trump delivered his closing speech in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as he had in the last 2 election seasons. Earlier in the day, he spoke from Reading, Pennsylvania.
November 5th, 2024 will be Liberation Day in America. And on day one, I will launch the largest deportation program of criminals in American history. We're going to get them out. We have to. I will invoke the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. You know, 1798, that's when they ran the country a little tougher than we run it today.
Trump's final hate-filled anti-immigrant rallies came as Politico reported the Trump campaign recently fired a white nationalist field director in western Pennsylvania. 24-year-old Luke Meyer, known online as Alberta Barbarossa, was a co-host of the podcast Alexandria with far-right media personality Richard Spencer. Speaking as his virtual alter ego, Meyer once said, quote, "Why can't we make New York, for example, white again? Why can't we clear out and reclaim Miami?" he asked. Also at stake in today's election, abortion, which is on the ballot in a record 10 states. Reproductive rights supporters are watching Florida especially closely, where a ballot measure, Amendment 4, could restore abortion access after Republicans imposed a six-week ban. A Pennsylvania judge Monday declined to halt Elon Musk's $1 million daily giveaway to swing state voters who sign on to his super PAC pledge. Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner had sought to shut down the scheme, calling it an illegal lottery. Palestinian medical sources say at least 70 people were killed by Israeli attacks on the Gaza Strip over the last 24 hours. At least 20 people were killed in the besieged northern town of Beit Lahia when an Israeli airstrike ripped through two homes. Meanwhile, Israeli soldiers have withdrawn from the Kamal Adwan hospital after raiding it for a second day in a row. The hospital had already been operating with a skeleton crew after Israeli forces last week detained dozens of medical workers there. Israel's most recent attacks damaged the hospital's upper floors where the children's ward was located, seriously wounding a child who was recovering from surgery. On Monday, the head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, said the amount of aid entering Gaza reached a new low in October, with a daily average of just 30 trucks entering into Gaza. That's just 6% of the cargo allowed to cross before Israel began its assault on Gaza nearly 13 months ago. Palestinians say the situation will be even worse after Israel this week formally ended a decades-old cooperation agreement that allowed UNRWA to operate.
This is considered a death sentence for Palestinians inside the Gaza Strip. How many thousand students will be deprived of schooling? How many thousand patients will be deprived of treatment? How many thousand employees will lose their jobs? How many thousand people will be deprived of aid? This is a violation of international norms and the laws that exist in the world.
This comes as the Biden administration continues to provide weapons and ammunition to Israel, ignoring foreign assistance laws that bar such aid to countries that commit gross human rights violations. On Monday, Associated Press reporter Matt Lee asked State Department spokesperson Matt Miller to grade Israel's response to that 30-day deadline imposed by the U.S. to end its starvation campaign in northern Gaza.
They certainly do not have a passing grade. They have failed. Or I said they have failed to implement all of the things that we recommend in that letter. Now, that said, we are not at the end of the 30-day period,
okay,
and we are in
conversation. Not ready to give them.
It's not the end. It's not the end of the semester. You don't hand out grades
okay,
in the middle.
Well,
in the middle.
I suspect that the levity is a little bit inappropriate.
I expect that the levity is a little bit inappropriate, said AP reporter Matt Lee, as the State Department spokesperson Matt Miller chuckled at his own joke. Israeli forces have killed at least four Palestinians during airstrikes on the occupied West Bank. Two Palestinians were killed by an Israeli drone attack near the city of Kabatia, and two others in an aerial attack on Tamun outside the city of Nablus. The killings come after armed Israeli settlers launched a wave of attacks on West Bank Palestinians, burning their homes and property and destroying olive trees. On Sunday evening, settlers torched more than 20 vehicles in the city of Al-Bireh, while in the town of Deir Dibwan near Ramallah, settlers scrawled hateful graffiti on walls and set fire to a parking lot. Elsewhere, settlers burned dozens of olive trees in a grove on Palestinian land in the town of Birqa, northwest of Nablus. When Palestinians tried to put out the flames, they say they were beaten by settlers who also threw rocks at them. Israeli strikes in Lebanon Monday killed at least 15 people and wounded 90 others. The attacks bring the overall death toll from Israeli attacks on Lebanon to more than 3,000. Hezbollah responded by firing rockets toward Israel and what said were attacks on soldiers' barracks and other military targets. Lebanon's National News Agency reports Israeli attacks have devastated 37 towns across southern Lebanon, destroying more than 40,000 housing units. Syria's government has condemned Israel for carrying out airstrikes in a civilian area south of the capital, Damascus. On Monday, Syrian media reported two people were killed and five others wounded when Israeli warplanes launched an air attack from the direction of the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. Israel's Air Force later claimed it had hit Hezbollah targets in Syria. In Russia, President Vladimir Putin met at the Kremlin Monday with North Korean Foreign Minister Cho Sung-hui. Their meeting came as Ukraine's government warned 11,000 North Korean troops are in Russia's Kursk region bordering Ukraine, preparing to be sent into combat. Ukraine seized part of the Russian territory in a surprise counterinvasion in August. In Brussels, NATO chief Mark Rutte called North Korea's entry into the Ukraine war an escalation.
North Korean troops being deployed in Russia against Ukraine, this is a significant escalation, and it makes us even more focused and determined to make sure that Ukraine has what it needs to fight off the Russians, including the North Koreans.
In Ohio, a white former police officer has been found guilty of murdering Andre Hill, a 47-year-old black man from Columbus who was shot dead while leaving a friend's house in 2020. Adam Coy faces a mandatory sentence of life in prison without possibility of parole for 15 years. Body camera video shows then-officer Coy opened fire just moments after encountering Hill, who was unarmed, striking him three times in the leg and once in the chest. Officer Coy was not using his body camera properly at the time, and he failed to administer aid to Hill for several minutes as Hill lay dying. In the wake of the killing, the Columbus City Council passed Andre's Law, mandating the use of body cameras and requiring police officers to provide aid if they cause any injuries. Elsewhere in Ohio, in Canton, two police officers have been indicted for reckless homicide in the killing of Frank Tyson, a 53-year-old black man who died after police violently pinned him to the ground. Body cam video shows officers Camden Birch and Bo Schonega ignoring Tyson's pleas as he repeated, "I can't breathe," before losing consciousness. Reckless homicide is punishable by up to 36 months in prison. And in labor news, 33,000 Boeing workers on the West Coast approved a new contract, ending a strike that started over 7 weeks ago. The contract will raise salaries more than 43% over the next 4 years and includes a ratification bonus of $12,000. John Holden is president of District 751 of the International Association of Machinists.
We reduced the cost of health care and added other important insurance programs. We secured a commitment for the next airplane program. We got commitments on jobs for our facilities and maintenance to maintain the headcount, and we made many other improvements. Tonight, our membership voted to accept this contract by 59%. You know, it's time for us to come together. This is a victory.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
So, Juan, this is Election Day. It is the last day of voting in the United States.
Yes, Amy, it is. And, you know, it's at times like this, everyone has to take stock, even though clearly a vote is not the main determinant of social change in the country. And I know that many progressive and first-time voters have faced an excruciating dilemma this year, a choice between two unsatisfactory candidates, especially for those Americans who are outraged by our government's continued support for Israel's year-long genocidal assault on Gaza and all the bombings and assassinations that Israel has conducted across the Middle East. So I guess it's understandable that many have refused to vote for either of the candidates or have chosen instead third-party candidates or just to sit it out. But this is not the first time Americans have faced such terrible choices. I recall back in 1968 when I was just in my early 20s and the country faced a choice between Republican Richard Nixon and the Democrat Hubert Humphrey. Another terrible war was raging in Vietnam that would eventually take 2 million lives of Vietnamese. War crimes being committed back then directly by the United States. So the use of napalm and Agent Orange and massive bombing of civilian areas in Vietnam. At home, Nixon was using racial rhetoric about law and order, clearly directed at protests, massive protests by Black Americans, just as Trump today is using racist imagery against immigrants from Latin America, Africa, and the Caribbean. And Nixon was promising to end the war in Vietnam if he got elected. And so many of us refused to vote for in that election. And of course, Nixon prevailed, thus paving the way for the modern right-wing shift in U.S. domestic and foreign policy. Instead of ending the war, Nixon expanded it. He invaded Cambodia and Laos, and the killing continued in Southeast Asia for another 6 years. And it would take many years for some of us to realize we'd made a big mistake in sitting out that election. And I don't claim to judge what people are doing now, but I'm just would counsel those who still haven't made their decision that making these decisions at the time of election may be difficult, but sometimes necessary to do to open up the way for possible change in the future.
Well, we're going to look today at elections across the country, from House to Senate races to mis- and disinformation campaigns around the country, and the possibility of challenges to the entire certification process. Tonight, Democracy Now! Will be doing a four-hour special at democracynow.org and on radio and television stations across the country from 8 Eastern time to midnight. And we'll pick it up again at 8 in the morning Eastern Standard Time to 10 in the morning, an expanded two-hour show tomorrow. But right now, when we come back, Donald Trump laying the groundwork to challenge the results again if he loses to Kamala Harris. We'll speak with New York Times reporter Jim Rutenberg. Stay with us.
Georgia, Georgia. The whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Oh, I say, Georgia, Georgia.
Singing Georgia on My Mind. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. On this election day, we look now at how Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump may try to prematurely claim victory, just as he did the early morning hours after Election Day 2020. At a recent campaign event in Arizona, Trump was interviewed by former Fox News host Tucker Carlson and anticipated declaring victory while he pushed a narrative of widespread fraud by Democrats.
We're doing very well. I think we're leading by a lot. And
And if we can keep them, if we can keep that cheating down, because they're a bunch of cheats, if we can keep that cheating down, we're going to have a tremendous victory. I think it'll go down as one of the greatest victories of all time. So we're going to have some, we're going to have an exciting time. We're going to have an exciting time.
In key swing states, officials are bracing for conspiracy theories and violence, especially in cities Trump accused of electoral fraud in 2020, which have sizable black populations like Philadelphia, Atlanta, and Detroit, where Trump supporters tried to stop the count. This is Detroit City Clerk Janice Winfrey.
In the building where we do the actual work, here on the boulevard, we've replaced all of our first floor windows with bulletproof windows. We have updated our security camera system. We have updated the number of security plainclothes as well as uniformed. And we're just making sure that we're all safe. My concerns are not with the administration of the process. I'm very confident in that process. But I am concerned and hopeful that our country will accept whatever the outcome of this election is in a peaceful and a unified manner.
If and when Trump tries to prematurely declare victory, he won't do it alone. He has allies in battleground states. The cover of this week's New York Times Magazine reads in large font, "A Republican movement driven by disinformation has taken over election boards across the country. As voters go to the polls, a certification crisis looms that could threaten American democracy." That quote is from a major investigation by our first guest, Jim Rutenberg. We turn right now to Jim Rutenberg, who, before he was at the Times, was at the New York Daily News and a colleague of Juan Gonzalez. Jim, welcome to Democracy Now! Why don't you lay out what you found? What should we know about the looming election certification crisis?
Well, thanks for having me. A big shout out to Juan. Thank you for mentioning our alma mater, the Daily News. Excuse me. I've been spending the past few months traveling around some swing states looking at this movement that grew up around January 6th. I think for a lot of people, January 6th was an inflection point for this, to put it mildly, wild, allegedly illegal scheme to overturn election results, which obviously our system is built to not allow. What happened, though, despite all the prosecutions that have gone forward in states and at the federal level, was that a movement started from the ground up with some high up help that attacked the sort of process. It went at the process of certification, which we all watched January 6th when Congress certifies the vote. That's the end of the process. The beginning of that process is at this hyper local level at your county clerk's office, your local election board. It's different in every state, where these very local commissioners will certify the vote. That's simply take the results and pass, affirm them to the extent that they can and pass them along, even if there are problems, because problems like fraud and irregularities, those are handled in the courts. But what's happened over the past few years is an amazing number, an unprecedented number of local commissioners have moved to block certification at that level, at smaller election kind of level. But now this could affect the presidential, and people are very concerned about this throughout the sort of civil rights legal community.
And Jim, you write in that article that tens of millions of dollars flooded into election integrity groups over the past few years, and a new strategy was developed to purge the party of those Republicans who resisted Trump's 2020 scheme. Could you give some examples of how that happened and where?
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting because you have this movement. Literally, you had people like Patrick Byrne, who was the Overstock.com founder, put a lot of money into these groups. Your listeners probably have heard of the Conservative Partnership Institute, which became the very well endowed, financially endowed organization of the sort of the Trump world outside of the White House, post White House. They aligned with a lawyer named Cleta Mitchell, who was on the famous phone call in Georgia where Trump asked the Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, to find votes, quote unquote. So that's the money. And other organizations have also traced this tens of millions of dollars flood in. But at the same time, people like Steve Bannon and people like Ms. Mitchell talked about, here's what we have to do. We have to go local. We have to get into the voting system, as Cleta Mitchell would say, to take it back. Right. She would allege that the voting system had been taken over by outside groups from the left, and we need to take it back. So you saw these commission people showing up at meetings and really pressing these commissioners who are already at that level about supposed fraud in the 2020 stolen election. And then, as I traced it, but other people have as well, you see them move into positions of influence. In Washoe County, Nevada, there was already one person who voted against the certification in 2020, very rare at that time, was joined by a second member, Mike Clark, who starts voting against certifications. They start pressuring a third Republican to try to vote with them. That's at the very local level. But again, Juan, you hit on this idea. They had to move out people they described as rhinos, who actually are very conservative Republicans. But if they weren't willing to go along with this idea of a stolen election, they wanted them out. And as you saw them succeed in that throughout the country, you see these quote unquote American firsters, as they call them, moving into place and executing a plan based on these theories that have been debunked again and again.
And talk about Arizona, another key battleground state that you examined, and where the Arizona State Senate Republicans conducted a forensic audit. Could you talk about that and the impact that that has had on the voters of Arizona?
Yeah. And, you know, when I went back to Arizona, because listeners might remember this, there was this very controversial and objectively badly done audit of the vote in 2020. This happened in 2021. The Arizona Senate moves on this idea that we need an outside group to audit our vote. They hire a company called the Cyber Ninjas out of Florida. The man who runs it has been associated with Trump world figures who were trying to overturn the 2020 results. They are mishandling ballots, allegedly. They're not an experienced auditing firm. And people might remember that this was treated as, in mainstream circles, as kind of a joke. But really what that was the beginning, the kind of getting back the band after January 6th. You saw the money groups I was talking about flood in there. There's even some money from a Trump super PAC that gets into that. And where the mainstream press says this thing was a mess, let's move on. In Trump world, and to Trump himself, they seized on details that this group came up with to say, we are now vindicated. We see that the Arizona election was a mess and clearly stolen. And so for part of this world that lives in a different media bubble, the message is that this was somehow affirming the view. And that is really the beginning in Arizona, in Maricopa County. That's where the movement, the post-January 6th movement, begins to retool itself for this election cycle.
And talk, Jim, about Nevada.
I went up to Washoe County, Nevada, because I think something that I was very interested in, and I went kind of deep into, was a Republican commissioner. I mentioned that this Washoe County board had two people who were doubted election results, had voted against certification. There's a third Republican on the board. It's a five-member board, and she is not a denier. She's a very traditional Republican, believe me, conservative Republican by any old world standard. And by old world, I mean just a couple of years ago. And a lot of pressure comes on this third Republican that in their primary, their local primary in June, this group of deniers in that community are pressuring her to vote against her own certification when it comes time to certify her own race. And she's in this meeting, July 9th, this happens, to certify. It's actually a recount of her race. She has won. The community of largely pro-Trump election doubters really didn't want her to win her election. They pressure her, and with some errant legal advice in the room, a lawyer with the local DA's office says, you can vote your conscience on certification, and she feels trapped in this moment and decides she has to vote against her own certification. And I thought that was, so that certification fails. So actually a local race, the certification fails. And I thought it was very interesting because here was someone who